supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Day 3 of the New Jersey government shutdown is coming to a close without a deal on the budget. I'm Tom McDonald, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. State lawmakers held meetings throughout the day at the State House, but top officials appear to still disagree over an insurance regulation bill that's holding up a vote on spending. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the Battle of Trenton continues.
Philadelphia resident Roger Eardley Pryor had planned a camping trip near the Delaware Water Gap last weekend, but then he got an email from the campsite saying he couldn't go.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed. I was a little pissed. We were really excited. Our friend had flew in from California. We'd made these big plans to have a fun 4th of July weekend out in the woods, get out of the city, and just dysfunctional government just seems to be biting people in the butt.
State-owned beaches and parks are closed as a result of the New Jersey government shutdown. Residents can't apply for a driver's license or get a copy of their birth or marriage certificate either. State workers have been furloughed. The budget stalemate comes down to a dispute over another bill. Governor Chris Christie wants to tap the surplus funds of Horizon, the state's largest health insurer, to fund his anti-addiction efforts. But Assembly Speaker Vinny Prieto opposes the move, saying he won't be bullied by the governor. Lawmakers met throughout the day in Trenton, and Prieto says they made progress in negotiations. But Democratic State Senate President Steve Sweeney says the shutdown will likely drag on at least a few more days.
It couldn't end today if we wanted it to, because if we could get something done, you'd have to draft a bill. You'd have to have a hearing on the bill. We could get moving tomorrow, but then you'd have to get emergencies in both houses in order to vote on a bill tomorrow.
Christie caught heat over the weekend after NJ Advance Media, which owns the Star-Ledger, published photos of him relaxing on a state-owned beach that was closed to the public. The poor optics come at a time of historically low approval ratings for the Republican. Christie told Fox 5 New York this morning that he'll sign the Democrats' budget if they send him the Horizon bill first.
But if they didn't send me the bill, I'd still sign the budget. But I just wouldn't give them the extra spending that they added to the budget I presented in February.
This is only the second time in New Jersey history the government has shut down over a budget impasse. The last shutdown in 2006 lasted 8 days. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
President Trump's commission to investigate vote fraud has stirred controversy by asking every state to supply detailed information about all registered voters, including criminal records. WHYY's Dave Davies has this look at how Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware are responding to the request.
You might be surprised at how much voter information is already publicly available. For $20, you can get the name, address, sex, date of birth, and voter history of every registered voter in Pennsylvania. Political operatives regularly plumb those lists for useful data. But J.J. Abbott, press secretary for Governor Tom Wolf, says the commission's request goes too far.
It asks for people's private information outside of what is publicly available for the voter rolls, including partial Social Security numbers, which the state would just never handle in that sort of a way.
Wolf has told the commission to take a hike, saying in a letter providing that kind of private information would violate state law. And Abbott says the governor doesn't trust the panel's motives.
This attempt by the White House to gather this information seems like the pretext, as far as we're concerned, to expand voter suppression.
Delaware hasn't formally responded to the commission, but says in a statement it will not comply with the request. State Election Commissioner Elaine Manlove says voters are angry.
I'm getting phone calls and emails from just voters all over the state saying, please do not share my information.
Manlove says she's conferring with state attorneys before responding to the commission. She says some of what they want is normally available through a public information request.
But since I'm having such an outcry from the public, I want to see if there is a way that I can protect that as well, since the public does not want their information shared.
No response so far from officials in New Jersey who've been affected by a government shutdown caused by the state budget impasse. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Here at Ventnor at the fishing pier with Commissioner Lance Landgraf. Commissioner, it's changed several times this year, beach replenishment for you. Now the latest is that the Army Corps of Engineers is moving down beach. How do you feel about that?
Well, we're thrilled with it. This is actually going back to the original schedule, where we would be part of the Atlantic City dredge operation, and then Down Beach would be handled by the two hopper dredges. So we've come full circle with this. We've had some delays with equipment and weather. They can't lay the pipe that comes on shore when the waves are greater than 4 feet. So that's part of this delay, as well as some mechanical things with one of the dredges. But we're thrilled with it. It'll keep our beaches fully open for the majority of the summer. They may be hit our northern end by late August, early September. So that's a schedule that we can certainly live with.
People were up in arms when they found out that in the shank of the summer there was going to be all the noise, the blockages, things like that. What do you do, because you're really at the behest of the Army Corps of Engineers?
The project is a rolling project. It moves rather quickly up and down the beach. They block off about 1,000 feet at a time, which is 3 to 4 blocks and would have been in Ventnor. And what happens is they move that 1,000 foot about a block every week. So if you're down here on a weekend, you may not be able to go to your beach for one weekend. But most likely by the next weekend, they're going to be gone. You're going to have a new beach, a much longer beach, and a more protected beach with the dune system.
I was here after Sandy. It was a total mess. I mean, I think everybody understands the water was going for at least a block, sometimes right, 2 blocks in places. And that's why you're doing what you're doing with these dunes.
Correct. The none of the homes along this beachfront were damaged due to wave action. Yes, there was some flooding, but that's coming from the bayside and the rainwater that got into our streets. When the beach is full of water with the ocean, the water can't get out. So it has no, you're a tub. So the water can't get out. So that was part of the problem in Sandy. What I will say is, you know, Margate, who was not protected during Sandy, had sand all the way out to Atlantic Avenue. We had water. We didn't have beach sand and erosion coming over the bulkhead that they claim that will protect those homes. Our dune does that, and it did that very well in Sandy. You hear that, oh, it's just going to wash away during the next storm. That's its job. A dune's job is to absorb wave action. And that's what it did during Sandy. It's what it does in our nor'easters. We don't get that damage because we have the protection from that dune that protects that wave action. Yes, they do erode. That's why there's a replenishment process.
Explain how the replenishment works. There's a timetable because basically we look at the beach and over a certain amount of time it all washes out and, as the mayor of Wildwood always says, comes down his way.
It does. They do get a lot of that sand. Littoral drift, that's what it's called. The general flow is down beach, down to the south. So, yes, it is a replenishment process. They build that into the design when they started this process in the early 2000s. They come in every 5 to 6 years, look at what's eroded, and they replenish that beach. This area, where we're standing now, up by our pier, the dunes will not be touched. What they will do is they'll go from the toe of the dune, the oceanward side of the dune, and they will regrade the beach out into the ocean, between 225 and 300 feet out into the ocean, create a gradual slope there, and creates a beautiful beach when it's done.
Now, that works in your favor because it is a rolling project, right, and you've got a multi-year contract in order for it all come together on a rotating basis.
Correct. This project will cost the city of Ventnor about $400,000. The DEP shares a lot of the cost, but that's our share. What we're not paying for is the reconstruction of the dune from Richards Avenue down to Fredericksburg. That was constructed originally in 04. Over the years, the storms, Sandy, and the nor'easters have eroded that because it was an unprotected edge of a dune. Dune system is only as good as its total length. If you have an unprotected edge, which that was, that will erode away. Once this entire project is finished, Absecon Island will have a complete dune system from the Absecon Inlet in Atlantic City to the end of the tip of Longport. That will create a nice barrier for all the residents of Absecon Island.
Commissioner Lance Landgraf, thank you for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
A Delaware animal shelter is making sure a homeless man and his dog won't be separated during a difficult time. From WHYY's Delaware desk, Zoe Reed reports on the pair's loving bond.
Every Saturday, Rob Roy rides his bike 35 minutes to Faithful Friends Animal Society in Wilmington, even in the rain, just so he can see his furry friend Mocha. Roy's on dialysis, but he makes the special journey to take the 5-year-old pit bull boxer mix for a walk and play catch with her. When Roy arrives, Mocha runs to him and wraps her paws around his neck before receiving her favorite treat, a Slim Jim.
That's my child. I can't say that enough. Like I said, I have no children. That'll do anything and everything for her, just as I see that she's done for me.
Shelter Executive Director Jane Parentozzi says Roy's experience is not uncommon. Faithful Friends board several homeless pets a year while their displaced owners search for housing. She says the shelter does what it can with the donations it gets.
It's really hard to see people lose their homes and think they're going to lose their pets as well, who are their family. And for Mr. Roy, Mocha is his emotional support as well. He has some severe medical issues that he's dealing with, and then losing his home because of unsafe conditions, losing his pet on top of it is very traumatic. So we're happy that we can help.
Roy, who's 50, rescued Mocha when she was a puppy. He believes she was used for dog fighting. One of her eyes had to be removed, and she was dehydrated and malnourished. Roy thought he might lose Mocha when he became homeless in March. He says he lived in deplorable conditions and even suffered an injury because of it. When he was evicted, he lost almost everything he owned. While he looks for legal help, Roy's living with his godmother.
I was at a total loss. If Faithful Friends were not there for me and Mocha, I don't know what I've done. My main point was, what is going to happen to my child? I'm going to survive and I'm going to make it, but she can't verbally speak for herself. So I had to kind of get someone to be her advocate.
Parentozzi says when Mocha first arrived at the shelter, she was stressed because she wasn't used to a crate environment. So the staff turned the office into her bedroom.
Mocha's really lovely, and sometimes she will be seen sitting in the manager's chair as if she runs the place. So we enjoy her.
Faithful Friends is now trying to help Roy find affordable housing that allows large dogs. Roy's hopeful he'll find a new home, but until then, he's grateful Mocha has a temporary living space.
Relieved, knowing that she is actually safe. And believe it or not, she's spoiled. She's really touched the hearts of the people here at Faithful Friends, and also they've touched her heart as well.
From the Delaware Desk, Zoe Reed, WHYY News.
Just 2 hours ago, Earth reached its farthest point from the sun. Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute, joined NewsWorks tonight, Dave Heller, to discuss orbits. The Earth's path around the sun is far from a perfect circle, and the two start their conversation with the assurance that an oblong orbit is nothing to fear.
An ellipse
is just an ellipse. We're farther away from the sun now than we are at any other time of the year, 94,505,900 miles away from the sun. If our orbit around the sun were a perfect circle, well, that would define things much differently for us here on the planet.
Are there more perfect orbital circles observed in space, or is the ellipse the rule?
Well, I think one that's really interesting to point out is the moon's orbit. The moon's orbit around the Earth is indeed elliptical, but because of tidal forces between the Earth and the moon is actually slowly orbiting away from Earth. So over the next billion years, we'll see some significant changes, and eventually there will be no solar eclipses, no total solar eclipses at all, and we'll see only what are called annular eclipses, where the moon's size in the sky has been reduced because of its increasing distance to be down below that of the angular size of the sun in the sky, and will no longer have total solar eclipses.
Let's also note that there are fewer than 5 hours remaining to bid birthday greetings to astronaut Harrison Schmitt.
Yes, astronaut Harrison Schmitt was the next to the last astronaut to walk on the moon as the first geologist that ever went to the moon of those that did on Apollo 17. He was born in 1935.
And among the cohort of those lucky enough to be born on Independence Day, let's extend greetings to Henrietta Leavitt.
A significant figure in the history of astronomy. Henrietta Swan Leavitt was on board the faculty at Harvard College Observatory. She was a computer, if you will. She was one that did reductions of data that had been taken by the astronomers looking through the telescopes at night. It was her work that led to a much better understanding of the size of our universe by coming up with a way to measure distances around our galaxy. She was the first to really understand how to use certain kinds of pulsating stars as a regular standard candle for what brightness of a particular star should be. So when you think about movies like Hidden Figures that talked about African-American women working in the space industry in the 1950s and 1960s, we find that women played prominent roles in astronomical research all down through time. Henrietta Leavitt is simply one of those women who made tremendous strides forward in helping us understand the size and structure of the universe. So she stands as a giant among those who did this work. Now, the most interesting thing about it is that she was not allowed to do the same kind of work that men were allowed to do. Women at that time did not observe through the telescope to collect data. They did all of the very, very heavy and complex mathematics. She was one of a group of a number of women who worked at the observatory at that time doing exactly that kind of work.
Lastly, you don't need fireworks to see a great show overhead. What's available to be seen in the night sky?
Well, now the sky is in a perfect setup so that we can see both Jupiter and Saturn in the same sky at night. Anytime after 10 p.m., we can now see Jupiter over in the southwest sky. We can see Saturn in the eastern sky. So the two biggest planets of the solar system are easily available. We're starting to see the main constellations of the summer sky show up also on the eastern side. That means the summer triangle is up, comprised of the three constellations Aquila the Eagle, Lyra the Harp, and Cygnus the Swan. Their three brightest stars make up that triangle, and easy for anyone to see under any conditions. If you happen to be a morning person, at 4:45, when the sky is just beginning to brighten up, you'll see the brilliant planet Venus over on the eastern side of the sky. You can't miss it. It looks really, really beautiful.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
For many, the 4th of July holiday conjures familiar images of cookouts, parades, and fireworks. But for some, the 4th of July is Derby Day. For WHYY, Ron Zawatsky reports on the annual Conshohocken Soapbox Derby.
When I did this, it was many years ago, and the car was wood.
Jim Pfeiffer and his son Gage are getting their car ready to compete in the 66th annual Conshohocken Soapbox Derby.
I tried it one time. I crashed. I broke my collarbone. And now he wants to try and do it and not break his collarbone.
Pfeiffer's son joins around 40 other racers ages 7 to 18 who hope to win a spot in the Soapbox Derby World Championship in Akron, Ohio.
Well, as long as it's not an inch and a half.
Mark Marine is the man in charge. He first got involved with the Derby in the 1980s. This is his 17th year as the regional director of the Conshohocken race. He makes sure the kids stay safe and have a good time.
We check over the cars, make sure they're built properly and safely.
A lot of things have changed since the Conshohocken Derby started. Now, instead of building your car from a set of blueprints and whatever parts you could get your hands on, most entrants purchase a kit with a fiberglass body and easy-to-follow instructions. After the parts are put together, racers paint their cars to stand out from the competition. The finished product looks something like an Olympic bobsled with wheels.
It's just like kind of a stretched out oval like piece of wood, and then there's like a shell over top, and in the middle there's just a hole where you slide into, and you have to like really, really get down into it.
On race day, cheering crowds lined Fayette Street, as caught in a video posted to Facebook.
Vinny Quintiliano, second place today. Congratulations. Aaron Donovan, you're going to Akron, Ohio.
13-year-old Emma Manley is a veteran racer. She says you can hit 20 or 30 miles per hour.
When you're going down the hill and you're at the bottom, you feel like you're going pretty fast.
This will be the first race for 9-year-old Samantha Maxwell. She is excited to join her older sisters.
Well, when my sisters were doing it last year, I went down and I was scared, but now I'm not.
Her mother, Laura Maxwell, is happy her youngest daughter can finally join in on the fun.
It keeps with tradition. This is something that Conshohocken's been doing for a very long time, and it's unique to this area.
Her 10-year-old daughter, Julia, has competed twice before. She says for her, the Soapbox Derby is about a lot more than winning and losing.
It's about just having fun, and I like having fun and racing my car because, like, it gives me my self-confidence because I like driving my car, and it makes me feel really good about myself.
For WHYY, I'm Rob Zawadzki.
Finally this evening, with 120 colors in its crayon box, the Crayola Company needs to get a little inventive when naming a new one. Over the weekend, the Easton-based company enlisted the public in selecting the name of the next new color. From now till the end of August, you can vote for one of five proposed names for a new shade of blue. The choices include Dreams Come Blue, Reach for the Stars, Blue Moon Bliss, Blutiful, and just in time for the 4th of July holiday, Star Spangled Blue. The new crayon is coming about as Crayola retires an old one. The shade of yellow they call Dandelion was introduced in 1990 during the company's first wave of replacements. And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom McDonald for NewsWorks Tonight.